Good morning. My name is Willie, and I am an alcoholic. This has been a beautiful, beautiful seminar, hasn't it? I think each and every time it can't get any better than this. I know that's a beer commercial. I know that. But it can't get any better each time as we begin to wrap it up. I think, well, this has been such a good one. We've had such a good crowd and all the new people that we have had. And it's been such a pleasure to be with my old friends, the ones that I made the first seminar. Thank you, darling. But it's been such a pleasure also to meet all the new people and to see their shining faces out there this morning. To all the mothers, happy Mother's Day. My fine son will be waiting on me when I get home. And it's funny, you know, days and days of celebration take on meaning for us now. When I first came to you people, I had memories of holidays that were sick memories. And each holiday that came along, Christmas, and seemed like I messed every one of them up there for a long, long time. And when I think back now, I think of all the good ones that I've had in between. So I know that my balance has been struck. I don't want to ever forget those bad ones. But today, this morning, when I woke up, I think, dear God, this is a good day for celebration. We want to stop and consider this morning, together, step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. Our principle behind step 11 seems to be awareness. To become aware, we've come a long way along this line by the time we get to step 11. As Charlie and Joe said last night, this is time for growing. And to be aware is to grow. And I think each and every one of us feel that this morning, that we can't help but look out there at that beautiful day that God has made for us. Man didn't make it, God made it. The weathermen have all of their radar scopes and they have all of their fancy machines and they can't make this day. God gave it to us. And each and every one of us this morning as we looked out were aware of this beautiful day. And there have been days when we weren't aware of what kind of day it was. Step 11 enables us to be aware of all the things that are going on in this world and with other people. For such a long time, I lived just aware in a vague way of just Willie and the mess she was in, the mess she had made out of her life and out of other people's lives, too. And it's so good to be aware now of other people and their lives and their problems, because for so long, they didn't matter. They couldn't. Alcohol stood between them and me. A lack of awareness stood between them and me. Our 12 and 12 says that prayer and meditation are our principal means of this conscious contact with God. Now, it's telling us, a lot of people have said, you know, I don't know what you're talking about when you say conscious contact with God. I've been around AA for 4, 5, 6 years, and I still don't have this conscious contact with God. And as Charlie and Joe have pointed out to us all weekend, it's in the book. It's in the book. The first line in our 12 and 12 on step 11 tells us how to have this conscious contact with God. It says we get it through prayer and meditation. They told us last night about praying and the proper way to pray. And that's not hard to learn. I thought it was when I first looked at it. And if you've looked at this step and think, well, there's some sort of gobbledygook going on here that I'm not ready for. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. God's ready for you to pray. He's ready for you to meditate. Praying is talking to God, and meditation is listening. And the listening is very hard to do. In the beginning, I could not listen to you. I've explained many times to people that I remind myself when I think about my first years in Alcoholics Anonymous. When I went to the meetings and I heard what the people said, but I did not listen. I reminded myself of my teenagers in my classroom. I'll come in some morning, I open up all my books and my notebooks and my clipboard, and I give all these directions. I say, we're going to start on chapter such and so, page 26, and we're going to do thus and so, and we're going to get this much out of it, and blither, blither. And some old boy back in the back of the room, I'm all ready to go, and he raises his hand, he says, what page are we on? And I'll say, didn't you hear me? Yes, ma'am, but I wasn't listening. And I know exactly what he's talking about, because that's what I did to you. I heard what you said. I heard the words, but I didn't listen with my heart. I didn't listen for the pain that went with those words and try to identify with that. I didn't listen when you told me about prayer and meditation. And see, I had been so busy praying, God, get me out of this, and I won't ever, ever do it again. I sat in a drunk tank in Seattle, Washington, and I swore to God that night, dear God, if you will just get me out of this mess, I'll never take a drink as long as I live. And I'll never forget how I felt on the way home when I begged that cab driver to stop and let me buy a bottle. Oh, I knew how to do that kind of praying, because, see, I was in trouble, and I wanted God to get me out. It's such a relief now to pray to God when I'm not in trouble, to pray to Him and thank Him for all the things we have. That's a great, great joy. And then after I pray, to sit and listen and wait for directions from Him. And I think the listening is the hardest part that I had to learn. My church had taught me how to pray. There were many, many beautiful prayers that I had memorized as a child. So I knew the procedure there. But I didn't know how to quietly listen for direction from God. I didn't think He could do that. I really wasn't convinced that if I didn't let Him know my needs, that He would know them. And Alcoholics Anonymous guarantees that. Guarantees it. Said, we AA are active folks enjoying the satisfactions of dealing with the realities of life. And that's good too, dealing with the realities. Not the dream world, but the realities. Usually for the first time in our lives, and strenuously try to help the next alcoholic who comes along. So it isn't surprising that we often tend to slight serious meditation and prayer as something that is not really necessary. When we come in and we sober up and we get so enthusiastic about being sober, and we're so busy trying to give away what we have, that we forget that we need the nourishment of meditation and prayer. We need to constantly nourish what we're trying to give away, or else we don't really have anything to give away. So we have to stop and listen and meditate and make sure that we're getting the nourishment from God, so that when we do try to give away to newcomers and to even sometime old-timers that are struggling on the program, that our life is complete and full, and that we do have something to give away. To be sure, we feel it's something that might help us to meet an occasional emergency, but at first, many of us are apt to regard it as a somewhat mysterious skill of clergymen from which we may hope to get a second-hand benefit. Our beautiful, beautiful sister, and the story that's told about how when the old drunk in the hospital begged Sister Ignatius to pray for him, and she said, you know, pray for yourself. God loves to hear from strangers. But I laid in the hospital bed one time, and a minister came in, and I asked him to pray for me, and he did. You taught me to pray for myself. That it isn't the skill of the clergyman. God doesn't just sit up there and wait to listen, you know, for clergy to talk. He listens for us. Or perhaps we don't believe in these things at all. Further on in our 12 and 12 on the second page, it says, those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air and food and sunshine. And for the same reason, when we refuse air and light and food, our bodies suffer. And when we turn away from prayer and meditation, we likewise deprive our minds, emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As the body can fail its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can our soul. Our soul can't just sit there any more than our bodies can just sit. Our bodies can waste away if we don't take care of them. Our souls can waste away if we don't take care of them. Our book says so. We all need the light of God's reality, the nourishment of His strength, and the atmosphere of His grace. And I love that statement, the atmosphere of His grace. See, that doesn't mean that I have to go any particular place to pray. That we can live in an atmosphere of prayer. I can be tooling down the freeway, and I can be talking to God. People look at me rather strange sometimes, but that's all right. Used to that too. I'm going along and I'm talking. And then I can finish the next 4 or 5 miles listening. We can live in an atmosphere of prayer. When we get so used to it that it becomes a part of us instead of something that we deliberately go about doing. In the beginning, I think we do have to deliberately pray. But you'll be surprised as you go along, this atmosphere will suddenly come. To an amazing extent, the facts of AA life confirm this ageless truth. There is a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer. Taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and much benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. And that gives me a promise that if I try to create this atmosphere in my life where God is always there, He's not off someplace else, He's always there. And if I'm ready, I know He's ready. And it's sort of staying in a state of readiness, and this atmosphere will come to be a part of our lives. As we have seen, self-searching is the means by which we bring new vision and action and grace to bear upon the dark and the negative sides of our nature. We've taken care of that in 4 and 5. It is a step in the development of that kind of humility that makes it possible for us to receive God's help. if we haven't done the prior 10 steps, there's no way that we're ready to receive this atmosphere. If you're not feeling it, maybe you need to go back and do some work on the other 10. Because when we're not ready to receive something, it's sort of like giving a child a toy that they're not capable of really working and playing with. And all it creates is frustration. So maybe if you can't feel this conscious contact, and if you can't feel this atmosphere of lovingness and grace from God, maybe you need to go back and review your 10 steps and see where you've fallen short. That's what I had to do. This is only a step. We'll want to go further. We'll want the good that's in all of us, even in the worst of us, to flower and to grow. Most certainly we shall need bracing air and an abundance of food, but first of all, we'll want sunlight. Nothing much can grow in the dark. Meditation is our step out into the sun. Okay, it says, how then shall we meditate? Once again, when people say, you know, I don't know how to meditate. How do you meditate? Somebody tell me how to meditate. It's in the book. Because it says, how then shall we meditate? And when they ask a question, they fix and answer it. I said, well, first of all, we might start like this. Let's look at a really good prayer. We won't have to far to seek. The great men and women of all religions have left us a wonderful supply of great prayers. Let us consider one that's a classic. Its author was a man who for several hundred years now has been rated as a saint. We won't be biased or scared off by that fact, because although he was not an alcoholic, he did, like us, go through an emotional wringer. And as he came out on the other side of that painful experience, didn't say that this man had always been a good man. He had been through it. But when he came out on the other side of that painful experience, which by step 10 we should have begun to come out, this prayer was his expression of what he could then see, then feel, and wish to become. And the prayer is, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there's hatred, I may bring love, and where there's wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. Where there is discord, I may bring harmony. Where there's error, I might bring truth. Where there's doubt, I may bring faith. That where there's despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand rather than to be understood, and to love rather than to be loved. For it's by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It's by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. As beginners in meditation, we might well reread this prayer several times, very slowly, savoring every word and trying to take in the deep meaning of each phrase and idea. It'll help if we can drop all resistance of what our friend says. For in meditation, debate has no place. We rest quietly with the thoughts of someone who knows, so that we may experience and learn. Once more we read that prayer and again try to see what its inner essence is. We'll think now about the man who first uttered the prayer. First of all, he wanted to become a channel. We can't just sit around and think that we're going to absorb what we have in this room. We can't just think that because we have been here and have felt something, that it's just going to stay all by itself when we go and get in our cars and go home. We want to want it. That's something we can't give to each other. Dear God, I wish we could. I wish those men that were struggling with me in the beginning could have given me the wanting. I kept saying, you know, I have to stay sober to hold on to this man that I worked real hard to get. I have to stay sober. I can't drink. And I didn't understand when a beautiful, beautiful man in Omaha, Nebraska said to me, Willie, I hope that the day comes real soon where you're going to say to me, I want to stay sober instead of I can't drink. There's a world of difference between those two statements. And first of all, we have to want to have this conscious contact with God. It's not going to just float down and enter in us. So the man wanted to be a channel. Then he asked for the grace to bring love and forgiveness and harmony and truth, faith, hope, light, and joy to every human being he could. Let's spread some of this around. We don't have to keep it in this room. We don't have to keep it exclusively for our fellow sufferers. Let's start at home. That's the place where we live. Let's start at home trying to bring some of this love and forgiveness and harmony and truth and faith, hope and light and joy. That's a good place to start. We can carry it into our professional lives. Because the book says, let's include every human being. Because that's what this man, this beautiful saint, was trying to do. Let's make everybody's life just a little bit better. I'm passing on to you what was told to me. And what's still being told to me. When I see men like Wesley putting so much into so many lives in ways that all he needs to do is to touch our lives, to Charlie and Joe, putting so much into other people's lives, expecting nothing in return. These are the things that I want to shoot for. A lot of young people ask me, you know, it sort of hurts my feelings, but that's all right, I get over it. They'll hear, you know, that I've been sober for 27 years. And I know that they don't mean to, but they'll say to me, you've been sober longer than I've been born. As we say down home, that takes all the starch out of my drawers. But see, I still need that. I still need Wesley. I still need Joe and Charlie. I hope I never stop needing this, because I need for them to pass the joy and the love and the harmony and the truth on to me. This beautiful saint thought it better to give comfort than to receive it, better to understand than to be understood. Oh, dear God, I wanted people to understand me. I demanded of my husband that he understand me, because I kept trying to explain myself to him. And I demanded that this human being understand me and why I was doing what I was doing. And even for a long time after I sobered up, I wanted him to understand this program. I not only wanted him to understand it, I demanded that he understand it. You know, it never occurred to me that this man needed some understanding. until the people in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me that he needed the understanding. He had married an old barefoot gal out of Texas, a very uncomplicated person, real easy to get along with. You can believe that. Back in those days, I was real easy to get along with. And then suddenly I had become into something, you know, come into something very, very ugly. He needed to be understood how he felt. So I learned to quit trying to make him understand me. I had a whole bunch of people that I could always go to that understood me. And I needed to start giving other people a little bit of attention on this understanding. That when somebody cuts me short, a clerk in a store, I can be a little bit better person if I try to understand immediately why they cut me a little bit short. I don't have to ask them. I can just think to myself, you know, maybe they're going through a bad period in their life. Maybe they're having a bad day. And just that thought, when I immediately put it in reverse, helps me to have a better day myself. Because if I go in out of there trying to make her understand that by George, I came in that store to buy such and so, and I didn't want any guff off of her, this is going to taint my day. It's going to put a cloud over it. And see, the clerk didn't put the cloud there. Willie put the cloud there by demanding that she understood what I wanted. And maybe by just trying to understand that all was not well with her, maybe. Maybe she didn't even like the job she had. Maybe her feet hurt. And Lord, if there's anybody that needs understanding, it's somebody that has their feet hurting. See, it's not this mysterious, up in the sky, floating around type thing that our program chooses to use to make better people out of us. It's small things. To give people love instead of clawing for it and trying to get it out of other people. That feeling is going to come. By trying to give a little joy instead of always trying to pull it out of everything we possibly can. I'm going to go out and have a good time. Well, I tell you what, if you want to have a good time, give a little good time. I was walking down the hall coming down here, and a man didn't have his tag on, so I didn't figure he's one of us, and he didn't have that look. But the devil was sort of walking behind me, so I smiled real sweet, you know, and said, "Good morning." And he just turned around and sort of looked at me like, you know, "Now I wonder what she wants so early in the morning." But see, it didn't make any difference whether I'm receiving any joy out of him. I spread a little on him. And if he rejected it, then that's his problem. But if I can be more concerned about giving somebody else a smile than getting one back, then that's the state that my face will stay in most of the time. And that's good for the new people to see. It's not good for them to walk into a meeting and see me sitting there. And then I'll look up and say, "You know, we're glad to have you." It's so good to be sober. There's so much joy in this program and in sobriety. And me sitting there all that time looking like I'd just been hit in the face with a dead fish. We can show our joy more than we can talk about it. And that's what this man wanted to do. This much could be a fragment of what is called meditation, to try to give away instead of getting all the time. Perhaps our very first attempt at a mood, a flyer into the realm of the spirit, if you like. It ought to be followed by a good look at where we stand right now and a further look at what might happen in our lives were we able to move closer to the idea we have been trying to glimpse. Meditation is something which can always be further developed. It has no boundaries. That's a promise. See, you have something to look forward to. Even if the beginning is very weak, you have this promise. There are no boundaries, either in its width or its height. Aided by such instruction and example as we can find, it is essentially an individual adventure. And I love the idea that my life is an adventure. I want to keep that idea always in front of me. Because none of us are ever going to get out of this world alive anyhow. None of us. And if we don't get busy living every single solitary moment, not even every day, but every moment that we possibly can, this is the adventure. This is the adventure of living this kind of life. Its object is always the same, to improve our conscious contact with God, with His grace and His wisdom and His love. See, we don't have to have the wisdom to do any of this. God has the wisdom. We don't have to understand what we're even trying to do in the beginning when we start trying to get this conscious contact. We don't have to understand, okay, now I'm going to get conscious contact with God. He has the wisdom to give it to us. He knows how He can get to each and every one of us. He knew how to get us here, didn't He? We didn't get ourselves here. He knew how to get us here. He knows us so well that He knew exactly what button to punch. I wasn't a blooming success when I came to this program. I stumbled and fell for 4 long years. I should be coming up on my 32nd birthday. I wasn't a booming success, but a beautiful fellow in AA told me, he said, Willie, you'll never be a failure in life by stumbling. You'll only be a failure if you say that somebody pushed you. God had the wisdom to get me here. He took me by the hand from that very first meeting that I walked into as phony as a $3 bill. He took me by the hand and He walked with me the rest of the way. He taught me everything that I needed to know that I didn't know up until that point. God has that wisdom and I have to trust it. It got me here and I have to trust it that He will teach me anything that I ask Him to. If I ask Him to teach me to meditate, He will do that. It's like the look out what you pray for because you're liable to get it. Well, I like to take the liable out of there. Look out what you pray for because you're going to get it. Because God has the wisdom to know what's good for us. And you know, God answered our prayers long before we even were sincere about them. There's not an alcoholic sitting in this room that hadn't drunkenly prayed the prayer, Dear God, help me get out of this. He did, didn't He? He got you out of it. He answered a prayer when you weren't even sincere about it. When you really didn't intend to not ever do it again. He got you out of it because He has you here this morning. The wisdom of God never ceases to amaze me. Never. Let's remember always that prayer and meditation is in reality intensely practical. One of its first fruits is emotional balance. Didn't any of the rest of y'all need that, did you? I did. I needed a whole bunch of it. Emotional balance. I want that in my sobriety. People that are just as satisfied with sobriety are robbing themselves. I want this emotional balance in my life. It doesn't say emotional void. It doesn't mean that I can't cry, that I can't hurt, that I can't feel. Dear God, I want to continue to feel. Otherwise, I am of no value to another living human being on earth. I want to have emotions. I want to cry when I feel like crying. I want to hurt when it's my time to hurt. Because God promised me emotional balance if I would try with this prayer and meditation. And that's what I want. I want my emotions, but I do want them balanced. Step 11, you know, when we consider this prayer, we have to look at one thing. The saint asked for things for himself, didn't he? And they were telling us last night that that's okay. It's all right to ask for things for ourselves. If we never fail to ask for something for someone else at the same time. He asked that he could be able to bring love. So that's asking for a favor. When we ask God to make us lovable people, when we ask God to make us joyous people. So it's all right. It's a measuring stick. Our measuring stick is that what we pray for will be of benefit not only to us exclusively, but to our fellow man. When I understood that that's as complicated as prayer and meditation were, to ask God always, God, if I can be a better person, then let that better person shine. You know, there are a lot of good folks walking around, and they hug their goodness to them like it was a brand new mink coat. They wrap that goodness around them, and they walk around with all this goodness. Our program teaches us not to just try to be good, but to give some of this goodness away. Give as much of it away as we possibly can. I love the expression that we have in AA of, you know, don't just talk the talk, but walk that walk. The example of our lives can be so terribly, terribly important to a human being. In the beginning, I heard you, I couldn't listen, but I could see. And I think the seeing of what you people were trying to do impressed me a lot more than your words in the beginning. I think a lot of you new people that are here, what you have seen this weekend, you've learned a lot, and you've heard a lot, and it has meaning for you, but it also has meaning what you have seen happen in this room, what you have felt happening in this room. You know, this 11th step goes in so beautifully with our four absolutes that were passed on to this organization by the old Oxford group that I've mentioned before. And our absolutes aren't all that complicated. Many people look at them and say, you know, this is too much, to be absolutely honest, to be absolutely unselfish, to be absolute in our love, and to have absolute purity. But really, these four things are not all that complicated. This is what I'm shooting for in my life. Not to be absolutely any of these things, but to be a little bit better all the time in each of the four areas. Because in order to see if I'm trying to be absolutely honest, all I have to do is ask myself one question. In every situation that comes up in my life or every feeling that I have, I ask myself one question. Is it true or is it false? Is what I'm thinking and what I'm dealing with a true situation or is it a false situation? In the mornings when I get up and if I have something that I'm worried about, if something immediately pops into my mind, that's a very human thing to happen. But that's one of the first questions I ask myself. Is it a false worry or is it a true worry, Willie? Or is this one of the days that you want to worry? Is it a true situation or is it a false? When I'm striving towards unselfishness, in my dealings with every human being, I can ask myself one question. How will what I do affect other people? When I'm plotting and planning something, when I'm deciding in that early morning, when I'm taking my time to do my meditation, and that setting aside that time sometime during the day is such a good idea. And when I'm taking my time in the morning and I'm deciding exactly how I'm going to go about dealing with any human being that day, whether it be that man I live with or whether it be the people in my profession, people I have something to settle with, that's the only question I have to ask myself. How will what I'm going to do affect other people? And let that be that question be important, the answer be important to me. Do I really want to make another person miserable? Do I really want to teach them a lesson that they'll never forget? Is this what I really want to do with one of the days that I have left on this earth? Get somebody straightened out once and for all? Because how is this going to affect that other person? In striving toward absolute unselfishness, this is all I have to do in my meditation each morning when my plans include other people. Striving towards absolute love, all I have to do is ask myself the question, is it ugly or is it beautiful? We know a lot about ugly. We're real acquainted with ugly. Beautiful love, we have to sort of teach ourselves. And when I'm dealing with love in any area of my life, that question alone will help me out. Is it ugly or is it beautiful? And in striving towards absolute purity, all I have to do is ask myself the question, on anything that I start to do, is it right or is it wrong? Is what I'm fixing to do right or is it wrong? We know right from wrong. Every one of us sitting in this room, God endows us with that instinct because He gives us a funny thing called a conscience. I've told my children in school many times, you know, they have a lot of decisions to make, young people growing up. God, they have a lot of decisions to make. And I tell them there's a little measuring stick that they can make that decision by. If they're fixing to do something, or if somebody suggests that they do something, all they have to do is go by that very first instinct that pops into their head. If it pops into their head immediately, I better not do that, then you better go with it. If there's any question, because there's no gray area in right and wrong. Now, we can bring our old, good old rationalizers that we can work so well. We can work those better than the people at IBM work those computers. We can bring it in and rationalize, well, you know, this isn't really wrong for me to do this because. And then we can go off into the sunset rationalizing right from wrong, but we know right from wrong. So to strive for that absolute purity, that's the only thing I have to ask myself, is what I'm fixing to do right or is it wrong? And these four absolutes are a part of my morning meditation, and maybe that will help if you'll just write them down, and just the questions. And as you think of your day that you're about to begin, ask yourself those questions. Is it true or is it false, what I'm feeling and what I'm thinking about the other person? How will it affect other people? How and what I do, how will it affect other people? Is it ugly or is it beautiful? And is it right or is it wrong? And if you can answer correctly to those four questions, then you can pretty well expect a good day. But that's the way I learned, because I had one of the old timers in AA, and that's the way I learned to start my meditation with those four questions. And it helped me to get my day going in the direction that it should be, towards you instead of towards myself. And you know who came out the winner? Willie did. I won a lot more than you did. But by directing my life toward you and not inside myself, I was the winner. If you're not familiar with this book, it'll come in awful handy. I use this for my 24-hour book. It'll take you up to middle of November. But in this book on page 264, as Bill sees it, it says, "The step that keeps you growing." Sometime when friends tell us how well we are doing, we know better inside. We know we aren't doing well enough. We still can't handle life as life is. There must be a serious flaw somewhere in our spiritual practice and development. What then is it? The chances are better than even that we shall locate our trouble in our misunderstanding or our neglect of AA's step 11, prayer, meditation, and guidance of God. The other steps can keep most of us sober and somehow functioning. But step 11 can keep us growing if we try hard and work at it continually. And this is a promise. And this is what I want. I want it all. I don't want to just be sober. And I appreciate you letting us be a part of this seminar. I appreciate Wesley including me in this seminar. And I want to leave you with something that came out of the grapevine and say bye to you this weekend in this way. AA is a spirit. It cannot be touched, nor can it be completely understood. It's as wide as the world and yet small enough to fit snugly into the hearts and the minds of man. It has brought light where only darkness dwelt. It's given hope to the hopeless and help to those who yearned in despair. It has nourished forgiveness in those who knew no pity. It's given strength to the weak and humility to the strong. To those who strove for nothing, it has given some goals. It has taught patience to the hurried and action to the lazy. To youth, it's given vision, and to the aged, promise. To the lonely, companions, and to the restless, rest. To the sick, it's been a doctor, and to the dying, it has revived the desire to live. It has no judgment against the unteachable, nor has it praise for those who learn. To the outcast, it's been a family, and to the childless, it has given children. To the ignorant, wisdom, and to the wise, tolerance. It's given to all men that which is most precious. It's given a love of life and a love of truth, with enough left over to share with each other. God bless you.